Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast featuring the Crop Doctors.
Good morning from the Crop Doctors Podcast Studio in Stoneville. Tom and I are here with Gene Merkel, who is the
Pesticide Safety Education Program Coordinator.
I just say Gene does pesticide certification, but that's a long title and I didn't want to mess it up. So Gene, thanks for coming to Stoneville.
Glad to be here with you this morning.
And hopefully he won't look at me and say, that's not what I said, you messed it up, because I'm pretty good at that lately. there's too much going on upstairs.
Titles aren't nearly as important as what you do and that you do it well.
We were joking with Gene that we could stop and cut and slice and do whatever on the podcast. And then as I was saying that, it occurred to me that Gene talks enough in front of people that he probably won't have any need to stop and go back or anything like that. How many talks do you think you do in a year, Gene?
Upwards of 25.
Okay.
So he's about on pace like we are.
Yeah.
In a given year, we do something along the order of 20 to 30, depending upon how things go. At least earlier in my career, I did. I don't know that I do 30 presentations anymore.
I don't guess I even keep track of it anymore. We don't do near as many as we used to do.
No, that's kind of the part of my annual evaluation. I don't put it near enough time into. I used to do a good job recording that, and I don't record that near as well anymore.
Well, we just don't do as many meetings as we used to do.
Yeah, our average attendance at our face-to-face recertification trainings is down, especially for commercial. It's on average, pre-COVID was probably 25 to 30. Post-COVID, I would say our average attendance on commercial certifications is in the neighborhood of 9 to 10.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot more opportunities for people to go out and do online training.
Yeah.
And that's made up for a significant amount of that, we believe.
Yeah. So, Gene, we're coming up on Christmas. My question for you is, and I debated on a food question, which I know Tom enjoys.
Oh, yeah.
Or
music.
But I'm going this direction. In your experience, what's your favorite Christmas tradition in your family?
We do breakfast tacos on Christmas morning.
Okay.
And that's something we've been doing ever since my son, who's a big fan of Mexican food, but we've been doing ever since probably he was 7 or 8 years old. I mean, we just...
So how did that come about? Just him enjoying it?
We lived in Texas prior to moving back to Mississippi in the early 90s.
Okay.
And we adopted some of that culture anyway. And it was one of the things that he particularly enjoyed.
Okay. That's neat. Tom, you want to throw one?
I'm trying to think. I'm just now I'm stuck on breakfast tacos.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like it too. Love a good breakfast taco. You can't beat it, man. There used to be a place in Amarillo, Texas that was around the corner from our house. It was unreal. Oh, those little diced up jalapenos that you could put on there. Whew, smoking hot.
Mm-hmm.
Really good breakfast tacos.
It's fascinating to talk to people about things that they do on Thanksgiving or on Christmas that are just standard for them year in and year out. And it's never even crossed your mind. You thought, yeah, that's cool.
Ours is a little different because our family's kind of split up, spread across the world.
Yeah.
So we have tended to be in Mississippi for Christmas and not gone to visit family. But I think we're changing that because age of family members and everything at this point, just important to get out there and see them. So traveling is what we can do. Now we can drive everywhere. The nice thing is my parents don't live 17 hours away in South Florida. They're 8 hours away, which is a whole lot easier.
Gene, I know a lot of people know who you are, and if they don't know you, they know your name from the program that you oversee. But take a minute and just tell folks some of your history and how you got to Mississippi State and how long you've been here and what your role is.
Well, I actually grew up in Starkville and went to school at Mississippi State when I was here. I have a bachelor's degree in landscape architecture, which is a far cry from pesticide safety education, but moved to Texas shortly after that, worked with a number of landscape construction companies, ultimately wound up as a partner with a landscape architecture and planning firm in Houston. We had offices in Washington, D.C., Houston, Los Angeles, and Tokyo. My wife was the director of the Arboretum and Botanic Gardens in Houston. We were sitting on the edge of a hospital bed in 1988 when our son was born and essentially said, wouldn't it be great if Morgan could start first grade in a place like Starkville, Mississippi? And it was one of those unanswered prayers or an answered prayer that we didn't know we were uttering. And so sure enough, by 1992, When Morgan was four, we moved back to Starkville, and he did start first grade in Starkville. And we bought the old Phillips Garden Center in Starkville and operated that for some 20, 25 years. And then we had some economic issues, some trouble we had to go through there, and I ultimately decided that we needed to close that business. And I really didn't know what I was going to do, and then I answered a call to ministry. I pastor a church in Artesia, Mississippi, and within 3 months of me accepting that position, answering that call, I talked to Mr. Elmo Collum, who was then the Pesticide Safety Education Coordinator, my predecessor, told me he was retiring, and I said, you know, I think I'd like to do this job. And he said, you know, you'd probably be pretty good at it. And given my experience in grounds maintenance and that sort of thing, he sort of greased the skids for me. I made an application and actually was hired as a spray technician, if you can believe how they put parfs together. But ultimately wound up in the position of pesticide safety educator. Been here since August the 1st of 2015. And really enjoy what I do. I love to talk to people. I love to be around people. And that just tends naturally toward educating people about pesticide safety.
Kind of fits in the mold of what Extension does.
Absolutely.
That's meeting, greeting, and working with the general public. Super, super important, especially in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't met anyone that's really successful in Extension that doesn't love people and love to help people. And the other thing that's great about working in Extension is that I hadn't met anybody in the organization that won't bend over backwards to do whatever they need to do to help you get done what you need to get done.
And that's right.
We always do the best we can with whatever we have, and oftentimes we don't have enough, but we always make do.
Describe pesticide certification, I guess, in general, because I know we have some folks that listen from other states.
Right.
And it's not a one size fits all. There's some unique characteristics from state to state. So I guess describe it in general and then specific in Mississippi.
Pesticide safety education is technically a federal mandate. All states are required via FIFRA and the EPA Clean Water Act to provide certification training for anyone who intends to use restricted use pesticides. And that's primarily what this is about. In Mississippi, there are three, we'll call them categories of certification. They're not necessarily different levels, but they're targeted toward different kinds of individuals. The first would be the private applicator certification, and that's for an individual that is producing agricultural commodity on their own or leased property and wishes to use restricted use products. Commercial applicators are individuals that would they want to use restricted use chemicals typically as an employee of a larger entity. Say, for example, Mississippi State University would have demonstration and research applicators, and they fall under the umbrella of their liability protections and that sort of thing. And then the third level is what we call a professional service license, and it's not a certification, it's actually a license, and it does require that you get a $100,000 general liability and a $5,000 payment and performance bond. And this is for individuals who are looking to sell services for hire. And it's important to note that a private applicator cannot do that, and a commercial applicator cannot do that. Only a professional service license holder can do that. Now, most states offer reciprocity in commercial categories. They do not offer reciprocity in private applicator, and they do not offer reciprocity in professional license holders. So if you're a professional license holder in pretty much any state you go to, you're going to have to take pass their exam. Sometimes they will waive the general standards requirement and just have you take the class of certification that you want, say, for example, ag plant or ornamental and turf.
What's your general breakdown then on the numbers of people that come and do pesticide certification or recertification? How do they classify within any of those categories?
In Mississippi, there are approximately 12,000 private applicators. As far as commercial applicators and license holders, there's approximately 3,800, somewhere in that neighborhood. And that's, I don't have a breakdown in my mind as to what the difference in professional service license holders and commercial guys are. But the commercial certification holders and professional service license holders do have to recertify every 3 years. And private applicators have to renew their certificates every 5 years.
that largest category of the private applicators, have you seen those numbers go up in recent years with the extend and enlist technology, given that those the products used there are restricted use, and then there's some language on the label about certified applicators?
I think what we have seen is an increase in the number of private applicators, and this is primarily due to the onset of the worker protection standard. Because
that was my next question.
Instead of having to train every year and keep records of that for 2 years, if a private applicator is technically qualified to do the private worker protection standard training, and you don't have to keep up with the record keeping because they just have to renew every 5 years. A lot of ag establishments have been seeking to get all of their people private applicator certification.
So what does that training look like? Step one, the initial certification, and then the recertification later on. What do those trainings look like?
For a private applicator currently, and I need one of the things I hope to set forth or get out in this podcast is we're in the process of revising the private applicator training due to some new EPA requirements. And this started, believe it or not, in May of 2018, and we've been working back and forth with the Bureau of Plant Industry, them submitting newly proposed plan to EPA, EPA review and sending that back, us modifying more things. But anyway, it's taken about 5 years to get this thing put together. The current training can be done online, basically a 25-question test that comes after you watch about 2 hours worth of videos. This new training that we're going to do is going to be upwards of 3 hours. It will also have different segments of commodity specialists that will be talking briefly about the commodities that they work with. And the main goal there is to make sure that our private applicators will know who they need to get in touch with in the event that they have a question or need assistance with a particular problem. But we're in the process of, actually, we're going to start recording this new training tomorrow morning. It's 12 chapters, probably in the neighborhood of three and a half hours worth of training.
Not what everybody loves to do, but that's pretty important. How will that make your job a little bit easier? Will you still have the number of face-to-face meetings that you offer throughout the state, do you think?
Well, most of our private applicator training is administered by county agents. And we're doing a series of in-service trainings at the end of February and 1st of March next year. We'll have one here at DREC. One will be at the North Mississippi Research and Extension Center. One will be at Central Mississippi Research and Extension Center in Raymond. And the other one will be at the Extension Office in Hattiesburg. And in that, we hope to get all of our county agents that hold a Category 10 research and demonstration and want to deliver the training, become part of our plan of work. We hope to get them aligned as to how to deliver the training, and then we'll make video material available to them. As far as my personal load, it won't make a whole lot of difference.
So you're basically training people to administer the training is what you've kind of evolved into now with the online stuff.
To borrow a phrase from the worker protection standard, train the trainer.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we hear that a lot too. Yeah.
They've been using that for quite some time now within multiple disciplines.
So then what does recertification look like, Gene?
Well, recertification as it is now, several ways you can do it. Anything that's sanctioned by the Bureau of Plant Industry. In other words, if you were to give a seminar and it consisted of at least 5 hours of material and had at least 1 hour of that dedicated to pesticide safety, then the Bureau could approve that. But typically, we have to have at least 5 hours of material. At least an hour of that has to be pesticide safety related.
You mentioned the Bureau, and I encounter that occasionally in what I do. Some people confusing the Department of Ag and then the Mississippi Bureau of Plant Industries with Mississippi State. So in your program, you're doing the training, but Mississippi State has no oversight over, in the case of the license.
Correct.
We don't handle that, and the Department of Ag through the Bureau of Plant Industries handles that. So I guess explain the delineation between your role and your program's role in pesticide certification and then the Department of Ag's role.
Technically, I'm supposed to be a liaison between the Extension Service and the Department of Agriculture, and where those two meet is at the Bureau of Plant Industry. There is a, we operate under a memorandum of agreement. The extension office signs off on, and the director of the Bureau of Plant Industry signs off on. Essentially, we work hand in hand. We handle training, and that's one of the things that that I try to get across to our people that we're recertifying. We're not the police. We're not the guys, the regulatory authorities. We're not going to put you in jail. If anything, we're going to keep you out. And so we encourage people to come to us. If they think they're outside the law or they may have a problem, then we want to help them get right as quickly as we possibly can. And I would say in my experience working with the Bureau and the inspectors there, their attitude is pretty much the same. They're not looking to rack up a bunch of fines on our ag producers. They're trying to get everybody as compliant as they possibly can and as short an order as they possibly can.
I'd agree with that. We got into it in those first years that the Xtend technology was commercialized, and part of the Mississippi label was in-person training, and then that made it onto the federal label as well, and that has since been taken over by the manufacturers. But there was just a lot of confusion. We were administering the training. The online portion of it was available through the Mississippi State website, but that's just where it was because the Department of Ag, they didn't have an office to accomplish that. You know, Ag Communications, Extension Communications did all of that for us, recorded the videos and got all that online, and then the testing procedure too. So it was all Mississippi State, but it was really all Department of Ag. We were like you. Right. We were just a liaison, just throwing an assist.
I think the Department of Ag had some legitimate concerns about the trend of specialty products having to have specialty labels, specialty training, and then we see what's happened with Paraquat with the required trainings for that. And I guess if the cow got out of the barn, you could wind up with all kinds of different chemicals with specialty trainings, and you can only imagine what that would do. And that's why the Bureau, I think, decided to get out of that. Is they had some legitimate concerns about that snowballing. So,
well, we got into some serious numbers of people just because it was required and nobody had. It was year one, so everybody needed to do it. And so we got into some serious numbers, and just the logistics of executing it all got to be
I remember your comments very vividly about having those in some county offices and saying there's not room for the number of people coming through the door. And that can happen pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, standing in the hall and scheduling impromptu, you know, hey, we can't get everybody in here, so come back at 2 o'clock and we'll do it again, even though we weren't scheduled to do it again. It was a challenge. We didn't have any experience, so we didn't know what to expect, and the numbers really put a strain on us there for a year or two. COVID took care of that. The week that the world shut down for COVID was the week we were scheduled to do our in-person training for Xtend that year.
Wow.
And, of course, that all got canceled. There's no telling how many text messages I sent the day that all got canceled, just telling people, hey, we'll do it, but I don't know when or what it'll look like.
How do you see that has changed in the years since you've taken over when Elmo Collum departed?
Oh, from a regulatory standpoint, I think I see the desire for there to be more and more control over what happens in just about every aspect. I mean, we have a limited number of methods that we use and a limited number of products, and where those overlap, we have what we call effective control. And when you reduce methods and reduce products, then you lose control, your loss of effective control. And I see that as a real trend. Some of the concerns about pollinators that are out there, I think there's a huge move underway to try to make people more aware. And I think, unfortunately, the media may have the notion that pesticides are the primary problem. Most bee scientists would tell you that varroa mites are the biggest problem we have with regard to pollinator health and how well the colonies are doing.
I would say that's just a general lack of understanding within the media entities in this country. They oftentimes don't appear to go to the right people with the knowledge, and they focus on what they're hearing from the loudest people in the back of the room.
Not to throw politics into things, but it seems to me that there is a narrative out there, and if it doesn't fit a certain narrative, then it doesn't get any play.
Gene, as we wrap up, you mentioned the overhaul in the pesticide certification training. And am I correct that Mississippi, on the federal level, Mississippi's kind of in the, at least in the first group of states that are doing that?
The last meeting that I attended where we actually discussed that, I want to say that we had more than half the states have been approved. We were probably in the first third of states that got approved. And I think the plan that we put together was reasonable. I think it's something that's doable from our end. And I think that our regional EPA folks were pleased with it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have approved it. And, of course, the Bureau of Plant Industry and the folks that got to do the regulatory work on it, they were pleased as well.
Okay, I couldn't remember exactly. I had heard that mentioned that we were kind of in the first, at least cluster of states that had gotten that approved. So I think that's a highlight for Mississippi and for your program as well.
We try to do the best we can with what we have. Sometimes that falls a little short, but for the most part, we're successful.
Highlight, Gene, where folks that are interested in your program, where they can find that information, and then, you know, where they can go to find the training.
Best advice I could give you there would be to go to the Mississippi State University Extension website, MSU Cares. Still type that into a search engine. It will take you there. And then you can go to the search bar there and type in pesticide applicator certification, and that will take you to our certification page where we have information about scheduling for private applicator training, for commercial and professional licensure as well.
Anything coming up? Anything you want to highlight on that?
Well, today we're doing one of the last trainings of the year here in Stoneville, but we typically do six different venues, and we do four trainings per quarter in each venue.
Gene, thanks so much for coming to visit with us. It's pretty important information, and we know that the job you do probably does not get near as much attention as what it should.
Well, again, we're happy to be here, happy to provide the service, and certainly glad to be on with you guys on the podcast this morning. And if we can do anything in the future, or if things update and you need more information, please let us know. We'll be pleased to come back anytime.
Thanks, Gene.
Thank you.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is a production of Mississippi State University Extension.